We're continuing our Black History Month episodes with Dr. Newell Bringhurst. In this episode, we'll talk a little bit about Warner McCary. He's a very colorful character and is very instrumental in the priesthood and temple ban on black members. Check out our conversation. I also want to remind you that our newest transcript is for sale, Russell Stevenson, so please check that out. We've got a special price this week only, so please check that out as soon as you can. Our sale is going to end at the end of February, so don't wait long. Well, now back to our conversation. So in Lester Bush's article, I think the first hints of the ban that he identifies is 1847, a statement by Parley Pratt.
Parley Pratt makes a statement that somehow he's paraphrasing actually the Book of Abraham, that aren't blacks cursed as pertaining to the priests. He's always phrasing it as a parenthetical statement. It's almost like a query, because he comes across the fact that Walker Lewis is an elder, and he's perplexed by this, and so he's writing back to Joseph Smith, or Brigham Young, I'm sorry, because Joseph Smith's gone by this time, and this is 1847. So he's writing this letter, and I quote it in my saying Slaves and Blacks. He's saying, I found this elder who has the priesthood, but it seemed, isn't it contrary to the...
Now, isn't that William Appleby that came...
Oh, I mean, it's Appleby. I'm right. Sorry. I stand to be corrected. Party P. Pratt, I'm trying to think of the statement that he's
so
identified.
As I recall...
is Appleby that's asking that question. I'm sorry.
So one of the things from your book that I really... was news to me, and I read this, 20 years after you wrote this in 1981, or maybe even 30, was the story of William McCary.
Warner McCary.
Names. Can you tell us a little bit about Warner McCary?
Yeah, well, he was an interesting character. He was an escaped black slave. His slave name was Warner McCary, and he runs away from slavery. He's a slave in Natchez, Mississippi.
Let me actually correct you on that. Do you know Angela Polly Hudson?
I just finished writing a review of her book, which is an outstanding. It stands as the definitive study of Warner McCary and the woman he married, which was Lucy Stanton, who comes out of a Mormon background, and these two. I assume you've read the book.
So I have read the book. One of the things that I just wanted to point out there was there has been a lot of statements that said he was an escaped slave. But in that book, it said that he was actually a freed slave.
Not really. He never achieved his freedom. And that was one of the things that he was always afraid of. And that's why he assumed an Indian persona, because he was always under the shadow of the Fugitive Slave Act as a runaway black slave. And he was always in fear that somehow he'd be rounded up and sent back to the South. And that was one of the things that contributed to him as masquerading as an Indian. And so he performed as an Indian. He even adopted Indian names. He adopted the name Okatubby. That was the name that he used most. And he would do these Indian dances and everything else. And so he goes to Nauvoo, and according to the sources available, he meets and marries Lucy Stanton, who is a divorced mother of three, and anyway, they get involved with with their Mormonism, and they actually go back to Cincinnati, and they're involved a little bit with the Strangites, and they are involved in trying to form their own little Mormon group there in Cincinnati, and that doesn't quite pan out. Those two efforts sort of peter out. And next place he goes to is Winter Quarters, and he tries to convince Brigham Young that he's an Indian. He emphasizes his Indianness, but Brigham Young isn't completely convinced. But what really infuriates Brigham Young and the Mormon leaders there is when he founds his own schismatic movement. He and his wife found their own schismatic movement. And part of the ritual is for him to have sexual relations with the women who come into, who are white women, going to bed in three different times. This is according to the diary that was kept by, I guess, the major guy, Nelson Whipple. Nelson Whipple gives the most thorough account of their kind of escapades there in winter quarters. And when, you know, and so when they're found out, you know, people around her are just angry because Harry's, you know, doing his own thing. You're getting into the whole issue of interracial, you know, miscegenation and all of that. And he quickly leaves with Lucy, and their career is they go around performing as Indians. I mean, they do that, and then they ultimately practice Indian medicine, and throughout the United States, I mean, they become national celebrities. And they even, as you're aware from reading the book, Lucy is actually sets down and does his autobiography, his biography about his exploits. And so they're making money off of becoming, to use the author's terms, professional Indian actors and actors. And they're performing as Indians. And then ultimately they take up Indian medicine, you know, folk medicine and that. And they, you know, they ultimately end up in Canada, you know, because he becomes concerned about his identity and being worried about the Fugitive Slave Act. He always feels like they're on his heels to take him back into slavery. So he is an escaped slave. His brothers or his siblings were freed, but he never was. Hmm. And so it's quite a dramatic story. And the fascinating part is Lucy Stanton, who, you know, she adopts an Indian name as well. And I think,
LaSeal,
Okatubby, you know, she kind of takes part of his name. And so she's performing her Indian thing and doing her Indian folk medicine. And ultimately she starts performing abortions. She becomes an abortionist. And two of her patients die when she's practicing in Buffalo, New York. And she's sent up to prison. She is sentenced to 7 years in prison for manslaughter because she's convicted of killing one of her patients. Does 7 years hard time. She's freed. You know what happens? She goes back to Utah and resumes her Mormon identity and marries the brother of all this is the upshot. She marries the brother of her first husband who was divorced. And she spends the rest of her life with him. And then ultimately she rejoins her children because she abandons the children that she had with this Bassett, their first husband, when she goes out and does her Indian thing. And so when she comes back to Utah after serving her 7 years of hard labor at Sing Sing, she's reunited and she's rebaptized in the church and she's resumes her Mormon identity. Wow. It's a stranger than fiction story. You couldn't make this stuff up. That was my overall evaluation of the book. Stranger than fiction. It's a wonderful book. And it's one of those that gives us a fuller picture of who Werner McCary was.
Yeah. She's actually on my list to interview if I ever make it to Texas. I guess she teaches at Texas
A&M. A wonderful scholar. I mean, the research on that book is thorough and prodigious. If you looked at her bibliography, it's incredible.
Well, and I understand she's not even LDS.
No, she isn't. Her field is, ethnic studies, I think. Yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, great. So is it true that Parley Pratt was, when he made that statement in 1947, wasn't that in a reaction to Werner McCary?
I'm trying to think of which statement. I guess you're going to have to refresh me on exactly
the 1847 statement where Lester Bush cited as the first statement about a cursed priest, blacks are cursed to the priesthood.
Yeah, and I think he's paraphrasing, perhaps paraphrasing the Book of Abraham. And I guess he's referring. I'm trying to think if he's referring again to Walker Lewis. I'm I guess I'm having a senior moment here.
As I recall from reading
it
seems like, because Walker Lewis was actually pretty well respected. As I recall from your book, it seems that it was McCary's, polygamy that caused Harley P. Pratt to denounce Warner McCary.
Yeah.
And say that you don't follow him. He's starting a new movement.
And
the blacks are cursed to the priesthood.
Well, I think he makes that as a statement, but nobody ever, it's like him making this theologically speculative statement,
right.
and none of that is backed up at that particular point by Brigham Young or any other leaders, Orson Hyde, who certainly had harbored strong anti-black tendencies, as reflected in his, in 1845, where he makes that statement, the reason blacks are cursed is because they were neutrals during the war in heaven, which was a highly controversial statement, but, none of the other leaders, really back up Pratt's, statement. And so there is no clear evidence that it was actually implemented as a working policy in 1847 or even in 1849, the further research that's been done. Mm-hmm. Lester Bush and I, I thought it started, and Lester Bush started in 1849, but it appears that date is even questionable when you look at some of the statements, when some of the statements that were attributed to that time are actually found to have been written a little bit later, and you go back to the original statements as made by that time, it becomes more ambiguous, because it doesn't come right out and say that blacks are denied the priesthood, and that's been verified by Paul Reeve, and so Paul Reeve has pushed the earliest date back to 1852, and I tend to concur with the later date rather than the earlier date, because I find Paul Reeve's thorough analysis of more documents than I had access to. And his analysis of it, I feel like the 1852 date is the most valid date for the actual beginnings of priesthood denial. And that statements that are made in tandem with Brigham Young's efforts to get the state territorial legislature to enact legislation legalizing black slavery. So those two are kind of in tandem. The beginnings of black priesthood denial, you say, well, they can't hold the priesthood because they're only fit to be servants, and we're going to, and he goes, it's a very, very lengthy thing that he states in the original document, and that appears to be the earliest date that you can date black priesthood denial is 1852 rather than 47, as suggested by Pratt's statement, or 49. As suggested in the truncated, it's a Wilford Woodworth statement that supposedly has been used as a basis, because he supposedly asked, what is the possibility of salvation for black people? That's the question that Woodruff in 49 is asking of Brigham Young. And allegedly in a later truncated transcription of Woodruff's journal, Brigham Young supposedly answers that he makes reference to him being cursed as far as the priesthood is concerned, but it's actually a statement that they are cursed, but he doesn't mention priesthood. Mm-hmm. And so the part about priesthood is sort of put in there later or implied later, when they've actually started denying the priesthood, after 1852. Mm-hmm. And Paul Reeve is pretty well, I think that's one of the things that he pointed out that, Lester Bush and I didn't have quite correct, was the earliest beginning date of black priesthood denial. I tend to concur with Paul Reeve's analysis that it didn't begin until 52, which makes it even more egregious in many ways. It removes it 8 years away from Joseph Smith's death. rather than, you know, the earlier, which would be at 3 years if it was 47.
Yeah.
I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Dr. Newell Bringhurst. In our next conversation, we'll talk about a really unknown character in Mormon history. His name is Walker Lewis. He was a faithful black elder in the early church in the 1830s in Boston, Massachusetts.
But getting back to Walker Lewis himself, he eventually makes his way out to Utah, thinking that he can maybe get his endowments, but they deny him. And so he makes his way back to Boston or to Lowell and resumes his barber practice. I mean, there's suggestions that he, you know, later on, Jane James wants to be sealed to Walker Lewis because she's aware of who Walker Lewis was and that he was indeed a priesthood holder. And to bolster her request, the legitimacy of her request for endowment, says, can I be sealed to Walker Lewis? And of course, that's denied. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a poignant story of, in and of itself.
Thank you so much for listening. Make sure that you like our page on facebook.com/gospeltangents. You can subscribe at YouTube at youtube.com/gospeltangents. We're also on Twitter at gospeltangents, as well as make sure that you subscribe on iTunes so you don't miss any of our episodes. Thanks again for listening. Click here to subscribe, here for a transcript, and over here you'll see some more of our videos. Thanks again.